154, Chapter 12, The Civil War and West Virginia's Statehood Movement. Chapter Preview, Terms, Strategy, Blockade, Ordinance, Cabinet, Proclamation, Capital. People: Francis H. Pierpont, Waitman T. Willie, Thomas Stonewall Jackson, Albert Gallatin Jenkins, Arthur I. Borman, Peter G. Van Winkle, Martin Delaney. Places: Philippi, Rich Mountain, Scary Creek, Kessler's Cross Lanes, Carnifex Ferry, Summersville. President Abraham Lincoln and most Northerners believed secession was illegal. After all, the Constitution provided for adding states to the Union, but it made no mention of states withdrawing from the Union. The President believed that the Union must be preserved at all cost. To this end, Lincoln and his advisors developed a three-part strategy, a detailed plan for using military forces, for winning the war and reuniting the country. The plan included the capture of the Confederate capital at Richmond, Virginia, a blockade, the use of natural forces to stop shipping, of southern seaports to prevent the Confederates from receiving supplies, and control of the Mississippi River, which would split the Confederacy and squeeze the two parts. Western Virginia played an important role in the plans of both Union and Confederate leaders for four reasons, all having to do with its strategic position. First, the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad, which ran through Western Virginia, was the most important east-west rail line near Washington, D.C. Control of this railroad and the nearby turnpikes was essential for the movement of supplies and troops. Second, Western Virginia's eastern panhandle included the northern end of the Shenandoah Valley, an area that both sides needed to control in order to access the most convenient north-south route for their armies. Third, control of the salt works along the Kanawha River would ensure a supply of this important substance. Fourth, the possibility of the division of Virginia, the most important of the Confederate states, would be a military and political victory for the Union. Additionally, the capitals of the Union and the Confederacy were located within 100 miles of what were then the borders of Western Virginia. Since each side had as a goal the capture of the other's capital, troops often found themselves in Western Virginia. But the Civil War was much more than a mere military encounter. Even as military clashes occurred, politicians were busily moving forward with plans to change forever the face of Virginia and that of the nation. Page 459, Section 1. Early events set the stage for big changes. As you read, look for the location of the fighting in Western Virginia, the steps that led to West Virginia statehood, term, ordinance. John Carlisle had supported the creation of a new state in Western Virginia. After Virginia's vote to secede from the Union, Carlisle changed his position and decided to support reorganizing the government of Virginia. Westerners believed that the government of Governor John Letcher had acted illegally in seceding from the Union. Therefore, they had the right to form a new government, one that would remain loyal to the Union. But while plans to change Western Virginia moved forward, the battle to control Trans-Allegheny Virginia began. The Philippi Races. Union General George B. McClellan, who had been reluctant to move into Western Virginia, crossed the Ohio River with 20,000 Union troops to protect the B&O Railroad. When Confederate forces gained control of the railroad town of Grafton, McClellan moved in from the east, and Colonel Benjamin F. Kelly came to join him from the north. Realizing he could be caught between Union forces, Confederate leader Colonel George Porterfield moved to Philippi. On June 3, 1861, a short, almost bloodless, battle took place. Kelly's forces routed the Confederates, chasing them to Beverly in Randolph County. Because the Southern soldiers fled so quickly, the battle is often called the Philippi Races. Since the fighting here appears to have been the first land engagement between organized armies, Philippi sometimes is considered to be the first land battle of the Civil War. Perhaps its real importance, however, is that it demonstrated the North's commitment to securing the safety of the B&O Railroad. The restored government of the state of Virginia. 2 weeks after the skirmish at Philippi, in an unprecedented action, the Second Wheeling Convention adopted a resolution restoring the government of Virginia to the Union. The next day, the delegates nominated and elected Francis H. Pierpont from Marion County as the governor of the restored government of the state of Virginia. The purpose of the restored government was to form a government that would support the creation of a new state from within the borders of the old one. After completing this stage of their work, the convention adjourned until August 6, 1861, when the question of a new state would be decided. At this point, Virginia had two governments, one in Richmond that supported the Confederacy and one in Wheeling that supported the Union. Governor Pierpont called together the General Assembly of the restored government on July 1, 1861, to fill all the state offices and to elect two United States senators, John S. Carlisle and Waitman T. Willie. The Battle of Rich Mountain. After the victory at Philippi, Union General McClellan decided to drive the Confederates completely out of the Monongahela Valley. Such a move would ensure Union control of an important section of the B&O Railroad and encourage the people in northwestern Virginia to remain loyal to the Union. After the defeat at Philippi, Confederate forces had a new commander. General Robert S. Garnett strengthened the South's position at Beverly and established strong positions on Rich Mountain and Laurel Hill. Intent on getting control of the railroad, Garnett planned to attack the B&O at Clarksburg, Grafton, and Rollsburg. McClellan, who controlled the railroad line from Parkersburg to Rollsburg, developed a strategy to keep the Confederates away from the rail line. Union General Thomas A. Morris was to hold Garnett on Laurel Hill, while another Union army under General William S. Rosecrans held the Staunton and Parkersburg Turnpike. On July 11, 1861, 10 days after Governor Pierpont called together the restored General Assembly, Confederate Lieutenant Colonel John Pegram was encamped atop Rich Mountain, 5 miles west of Beverly. General Rosecrans, with 2,000 Union troops, was ordered to drive the Southerners out of West Virginia. In the battle, 20 Union soldiers were killed and 40 were wounded. More than 100 Confederates were killed, wounded, or captured. When General Garnett heard of the defeat, he tried to lead his forces off Laurel Hill, but was turned back by General Morris. Garnett then turned toward Maryland. While his army was able to escape, the general was killed in a battle at Corrick's Ford near Parsons in Tucker County. This battle was fought on July 13th, 2 days after the Battle of Rich Mountain. The Battle of Rich Mountain changed the future of northwestern Virginia. McClellan's success in driving the Confederates out of the area allowed the restored government of the state of Virginia to operate safely and to push for statehood for Western Virginia. The Battle of Scary Creek. A skirmish in Putnam County occurred shortly after the fighting at Rich Mountain. Sentiment for the South was strong in the Kanawha Valley. As a result, Confederate General Henry A. Wise, who had been governor of Virginia from 1856 to 1860, believed the Confederates could take the region. He planned to follow the James River and Kanawha Turnpike and take Charleston, then proceed down the Kanawha River to Point Pleasant. Wise was able to occupy Charleston at about the same time Rosecrans was defeating Colonel John Pegram at Rich Mountain. Since McClellan did not want Wise to launch a surprise attack on Union forces, he ordered General Jacob D. Cox to come from near Point Pleasant to intercept Wise's army. The two armies met on July 17, 1861, at the mouth of Scary Creek, between present-day St. Albans and Winfield. Wise defeated Cox, but then Wise suddenly retreated to Golly Bridge. This move gave Cox time to receive reinforcements and then pursue the Confederates. Wise, anticipating the Union commander's move, crossed the Golly River, burned the river's only bridge, and continued on to White Sulphur Springs. When Cox and his men reached the burned bridge, they were unable to go any further. At White Sulphur Springs, Wise joined forces with another former Virginia governor, General John B. Floyd. The Battle of Forks and Spoons. General Rosecrans, who succeeded McClellan as commander of the Union's Northwestern Virginia Army, faced a Confederate force that stretched from the Tygart Valley to the New River. As part of a plan to defend against this line, Rosecrans ordered Colonel Erastus B. Tyler and the 7th Ohio Infantry to occupy Kessler's Cross Lanes near Summersville. Confederate General Floyd sent General Wise to keep the Union troops under General Cox occupied on Golly Mountain. Since he did not have to worry about Cox's forces, Floyd attacked Tyler's forces at Kessler's Cross Lanes during breakfast on August 26, 1861. His 2,000 troops completely routed the Federal troops. The battle has been called the Battle of Forks and Spoons because those were the only weapons the Union troops had in their hands at the time of the attack. The battle left the Union forces in a very poor position. Floyd and the Confederates had access to the central area of Western Virginia. This could have been disastrous for the restored government of Virginia, which was meeting in Wheeling. The battle at Carnifex Ferry. General Rosecrans reacted to Floyd's victory by attacking the Confederates at Summersville. The Southern forces retreated to Carnifex Ferry on September 10, 1861. Rosecrans attacked Floyd with 6,000 troops, even though the Confederates had an excellent defensive position. Because of the steep terrain and the forest, the only thing the Union Army could do was cross an open field and attack from the front. Each time the Union Army went forward, however, they were driven back. When nightfall came, the Union forces drew back to plan for the next day's attack. For some unknown reason, Floyd decided to use the cover of darkness to retreat across the Golly River. The Battle of Carnifex Ferry marked the last significant fighting in the Kanawha Valley in 1861. Robert E. Lee visits Western Virginia. After General Garnett was killed in northwestern Virginia, General Robert E. Lee brought his troops to the area, hoping to develop a plan to recapture the Monongahela Valley. Everything appeared to be in Lee's favor, but nothing went well. A cold spell brought torrential rains, freezing temperatures, and mud that made moving equipment impossible. And if those problems weren't enough, an epidemic of measles swept through the Confederate Army. Those troops who were not demoralized by the weather were ill. Lee had also hoped Confederate forces under Wise and Floyd would be able to attack Rosecrans on Big Sewell Mountain, but that too never happened. Because the approaching winter promised more bad conditions, Lee was transferred to South Carolina to examine the Confederate coastal defenses. It has been said that the only good thing that happened to Lee during his time in Western Virginia was that he found a horse that became his faithful steed through much of the Civil War and beyond. Traveler, whose original name was Jeff Davis, was bred in Blue Sulphur Springs in Greenbrier County. The Gray American Saddlebred had been sold several times and was named Greenbrier when Lee first saw him. During their first encounter, Lee expressed his admiration for the horse to Captain Joseph Braun, the quartermaster of the 3rd Virginia Infantry. Lee predicted that he would use the horse before the end of the war. Before he could purchase the horse, however, Lee received word of his transfer to South Carolina. As fate would have it, however, the 3rd Virginia Infantry was also transferred from Western Virginia to South Carolina. And it was in the Palmetto State that Lee had a second encounter with the gray horse that he had so admired in Western Virginia. Recognizing Lee's attraction to the horse, Captain Braun offered him as a gift to the Confederate general. Lee refused to accept the horse as a gift, but he was interested in buying him. After checking with his brother Thomas, who was in a hospital in Virginia, Braun offered to sell Greenbrier to Lee for $200. Lee agreed. When he became the horse's owner in February 1862, Lee changed the horse's name to Traveler because of his rapid, springy walk. The Constitutional Convention. On August 6, 1861, before the battles of Kessler's Cross Lanes and Carnifex Ferry, the Second Wheeling Convention reconvened. On August 20th, it passed an ordinance, a regulation or decree, to create a new state named Kanawha. In order to move further, the ordinance needed the approval of the voters in Western Virginia. The ordinance was approved a little over a month after the Battle of Carnifex Ferry by a vote of 18,408 to 781. By the same time, 53 delegates were also chosen to attend a constitutional convention. Those charged with writing the new constitution faced three major issues: the name of the state, the boundaries of the new state, and the question of slavery. Many delegates did not want to name the new state Kanawha. As a result, one of the convention's first items of business was to choose the state's official name. James Henry Brown of Kanawha County led the campaign for the name Kanawha. Opponents believed it would result in confusion because the county and the state's leading river were already named Kanawha. Brown pointed out that at least seven other states were named for their main rivers. Nevertheless, a number of other names were discussed, including Allegheny, Augusta, Columbia, New Virginia, Potomac, West Virginia, and Western Virginia. When the final vote was taken, the name West Virginia received 39 votes, Augusta, 1 vote, Western Virginia, 2 votes, and Kanawha, 9 votes. Having settled on a name, the delegates turned their attention to the boundary question. At issue was how much land to include in the new state. More specifically, should the new state include just land west of the Alleghenies or add parts of the Shenandoah Valley as well? In the final proposal, the delegates recommended that Berkeley, Frederick, Hampshire, Hardy, Jefferson, Morgan, and Pendleton counties be included in West Virginia. These eastern counties were added for one reason. The B&O Railroad, which ran through that region, was the great artery of this new state. When the delegates voted on the proposal, they approved the addition of all the counties except Frederick. The third issue, slavery, was an explosive and hotly debated one. One delegate, Gordon Battelle, worked hard to secure a constitutional provision that would abolish slavery gradually. When that proposal was defeated, Battelle proposed letting the people vote on the issue. That proposal was also defeated, but by only one vote, 24 to 23. The delegates finally added a resolution that would not allow slaves or free blacks to enter the state after the new constitution became law. This provision, however, was unacceptable to Congress, as the delegates soon discovered. The Constitutional Convention also took steps to separate West Virginia from its Virginia heritage. The county court system was replaced by the township system used in New England. Regular township meetings were scheduled. A procedure was set up for electing township officers, including a supervisor, a clerk, road surveyors, an overseer of the poor, constables, and justices. Some county offices, such as sheriff, were kept but limited to one term. The Constitutional Convention set April 3, 1862, as the date to vote on the new Constitution. Since counties were given 2 weeks after Election Day to send in the results, the General Assembly was to meet on April 18th at the call of Governor Pierpont. The new Constitution was indeed approved by a vote of 18,062 to 514. Not everyone had the opportunity to vote, however, because some counties in the central, southern, and eastern parts of Virginia could not or did not hold elections. Governor Pierpont recommended that the General Assembly accept the Constitutional Convention's request for statehood. The governor disagreed with opponents who suggested that the statehood movement was a revolutionary act. Pierpont argued that history, geography, and social attitude had created the need for the separation of Virginia. Therefore, on May 13, 1862, the General Assembly of the restored government authorized the creation of the state of West Virginia. The new state receives approval. According to Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution, a request for statehood must be approved by both houses of Congress and signed by the President. Senator Waitman T. Willie of the restored government submitted West Virginia's application to the United States Senate on May 29, 1862. Debate and proposed amendments, additions or corrections to a document, bill, or law, caused the bill to move slowly through Congress. Senator John S. Carlisle of the restored government served on the Committee on Territories. He tried to ruin the bill's chance for approval by proposing that 15 counties in the Shenandoah Valley be added to the state's territory. Senator Charles Sumner of Massachusetts proposed an amendment whereby West Virginia's admission as a state depended on its being classified as a free state. The Senate rejected both proposals. It was evident, however, that West Virginia's statehood bill would not be approved without some definitive statement about slavery. Senator Willie offered a solution that became known as the Willie Amendment. The amendment withdrew the provision that prohibited free blacks from entering the new state. It also created a systematic way to free all the slaves within West Virginia. Specifically, it stated that all slaves in West Virginia under the age of 21 on July 4, 1863, would be free when they reached 21 years of age. This proposal passed the Senate on July 14, 1862, by a vote of 23-17, 2 months before Lincoln's famous Emancipation Proclamation. After the Senate gave its approval, the House of Representatives approved the bill in December 1862 by a vote of 96-55. Reviewing the section, reviewing the content. Number 1. Where was the first land battle of the Civil War fought? Number 2. What three issues faced delegates to Western Virginia's Constitutional Convention? Number 3. What was the Willie Amendment and why was it important? Using the content. Pretend that you are a delegate to the Constitutional Convention or the Second Wheeling Convention. Write at least 10 diary entries describing what you observed. Extending the reading skill. Write 10 factual statements found in Section 1. Tell why each of these statements is a fact.